From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made just a couple of days ago with an announcement that seems to wipe the slate clean at Rochester's Parcel 5. Mayor Lovely Warren announced that instead of building a Broadway-style theater and a residential tower at Parcel 5, the city is shifting that plan to the site of the old Radisson Hotel. The hotel would be raised, and Mayor Warren says the Riverside site makes more sense for the theater than Parcel 5. In our second hour today, we'll talk a lot more about that plan and other ideas for revitalizing Rochester. But this hour, it's about back to the beginning for Parcel 5. Now, supporters of Visionary Square called it a second chance for Parcel 5. That's the concept of more public space, more green space, area for programming and events and pop-ups and recreation. They see this opportunity as a new start in their quest to create a green central square for the city, a community gathering place. But Mayor Warren did not commit to any individual plan for Parcel 5 now that the theater idea has moved. So what's next? This hour, we explore the goals and the approach from supporters of green, publicly accessible space, whether you call it Visionary Square or something else. My guests this hour include Ben Welk, who is a principal at Slow Road Consulting, and Ben was part of the team that brought Visionary Square forward, and we're going to find out how that has evolved. Ben, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Steve Carter is with an organization they call People for Parcel 5, which is, I guess, the newest iteration of this public coalition for more public space there, yeah?
Yeah. I would say it's kind of evolved out of the original Rochester Visionary Square plan, and it's focused more on the process of determining what happens at Parcel 5, more so than the end result or what it technically looks like. We're more concerned about how to involve the community in determining what happens there.
All right, and Mary Lupien is going to be joining us. She also works with, among other organizations and groups, People for Parcel 5. She'll be here. We reached out to a number of people. Some were not available today. And just to make sure I'm clear about something that I think matters in this discussion right off the top, it matters to us at Connections. It matters to People for Parcel 5 and these organizations. This happens to be a white panel today, but this is an organization. Visionary Square was represented by people from diverse backgrounds. Certainly People for Parcel 5 represents, aim is to represent in the entire community. And this is the first of many other conversations that will happen on Parcel 5 now that the slate is sort of clean again. And you will hear a lot of different voices in the future. But I know it matters. It matters to us and it matters to the organization. And all voices are welcome as we discuss Parcel 5. So now that that is clear, let me turn to Ben and Steve and just ask you, you know, we were sort of caught off guard with this announcement on Parcel 5 this week. And my expectation was, well, you guys probably had at least an inkling before we did. But Ben, you're sort of shaking your head saying, not really, huh?
Yeah, not really. We weren't involved in the details of the city making a different announcement. Certainly, we're thrilled to hear the results and spread the news very quickly once we found out.
When did you find out, Steve?
Probably a few hours before it was announced. I think it was 10 p.m. news, Fox Rochester. So a few hours before that is when I first found out. So
what was the buzz like in the community that's been hoping to sort of get this reset? What was it like?
I mean, a lot of people were texting and emailing, like, this is a win, right? Like we did it. And in many ways, this is great because it's a compromise. And I think that's what we've been pushing for this whole time. We always said that the theater would be best somewhere else on the river. Just Parcel 5 was not the right spot for it, if a theater is necessary in Rochester, a new theater. But this is an opportunity to start. Like, we're not opposing a theater anymore. We're working with the city now. This is an opportunity to start clean and work with the community and to decide what happens.
What did you think when you heard the news, Ben?
I was thrilled that the city of Rochester and its people had the ability to take belonging over space and program a space over the long run. I think, echoing Steve's sentiments and initial concerns, our big concern with the RBTL was that we're going to take an area that had already proven the ability to gather thousands of people. It was a leveler, people from all backgrounds, all income levels, all ethnicities. It was a place where everyone can belong. It's free. It's accessible. There was a proven track record of that, and that's something that we wanted to see continue. And with the RBTL, we felt that there was a threat that we were going to literally fill this space with this $135 million performing arts center, also displacing those people who are there with a venue that wasn't even going to be open 365 days a year. So now it's about returning to allowing the community to program the space, looking at really how we can use it more from a day-to-day basis. And I think the creativity that we can apply to that is just endless.
Well, let me bring in Mary Lupi into the conversation and ask you, first of all, hello. Thanks
Hi.
For being here.
Thank you.
Were you surprised at the announcement this week?
I was, but I had also kind of been feeling like it had been coming. Something was brewing. We didn't quite know what. I was extremely excited. I couldn't believe that we're going to get this opportunity and this chance to really do something amazing for Rochester. Like, you know, exactly what you guys are saying, something that's inclusive, representative, and really is going to foster community in this city that really badly needs something to bring both sides of the community together. And I'm also, you know, I don't necessarily have opinion on the new location of the RBTL Theater, but I'm glad to see that this proposal is including a smaller theater that's going to really make it a performing arts center, like they said it was, to be able to include other smaller groups in the community.
Okay, so listeners, as we go throughout the hour, if you want to join the program, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Once again, we invited the Warren administration to join us, and to my knowledge, producer Megan Mack, did we hear back from them? We did not. So they're not here, but I suspect we're going to hear a lot from them in the coming weeks and months as they create sort of a new pathway to deciding what's going to be there. So I think Steve's making an important point. For people for Parcel 5, it's not necessarily we want to have one outcome in mind and it must be this. It's more of a, is the public involved, is the public heard, and is the public going to have access to whatever is decided on? Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's exactly what we've been pushing for since we've formed. And it started as like an informal groups coming out of Rochester Visionary Square and other advocacy groups. But we've been just pushing for public involvement, better representation. And you've seen the turnout at City Hall. You've seen the turnout at events, and that shows a very diverse group of opinions. We've had a survey for the past month now. It's parcel5petition.com, and we've had 680-plus results on that. And we saw that 90% were in favor of Parcel 5 being sodded, 90% were opposed to an RBTL theater at Parcel 5, and 96% want Parcel 5 available for public use. And so that's just like a small glimpse, but that was us going out there trying to get input from the community, and we hope to continue to do that.
You want to add to that, Mary?
Yeah, just that, you know, you're saying it's not representative, and that's very true. And we totally acknowledge that. This has to continue, and it has to be broadened to include a much wider variety of respondents. You know, we went to events like the movies with the Downtown View and the Fringe Festival and the Jazz Festival, and that has a certain kind of demographic that comes out. And we also, you know, we promoted it online. Mm-hmm. But we absolutely necessary to get this survey and get the engagement out to the wider community, because this can't just be a space that's programmed by a certain demographic. It has to be inclusive for it to work.
So let me ask Ben, who was on this program in the, I would say, early days of the last phase of Parcel 5, when there were four and then eventually, essentially, three proposals that the city was considering. When you brought Visionary Square to our attention, I want to ask you what you learned in that process and how you now view what Visionary Square could be, because a lot of people are saying, was it back on the table? Is it dead? Are you moving on? Are you adding to it? So let's kind of go back to what you've learned and then how you see that now.
I think there's been a few lessons. I think learning how much the community feels a connection to Parcel 5 actually grew out of the Visionary Square proposal. Seeing even the opposition of having something threaten that space, being taken away from the community and having them be able to interact with it or program it. You saw the turnouts to City Hall. I think with the proposal itself, I think we've certainly heard new ideas based on it. And I think it's really important to also point out that the Visionary Square proposal was always an incremental proposal. It only dealt with 3 years of what was planned, with very initial steps to just even green the parcel. So I think now this is a chance to come back and think about the long-term future. I think we still should build incrementally. I mean, it amazes me that this beloved, you know, 1.17 acre parcel of land in Rochester has generated as much conversation and programming when we've been on top of gravel the entire time, playing softball games, to, you know, thousands at the Jazz Festival, thousands at Fringe Festival, movies with the Downtown View, and many other festivals and activities. This is a real opportunity now to actually augment those. And I think really bring the community interest. You know, we did have a timeline to put in that RFP. It was a rapid fire effort. We tried to do the best due diligence we could to get something in front of the city that we, you know, thought was not only affordable, less than $800,000 for the entire 3-year plan, starting with a $70,000 proposal the first year. But I think now there's even more opportunity for the community to paint the parcel.
Okay. And so Visionary Square technically is the base of what you might want to work on going forward, but in its old form, so to speak, it's kind of defunct?
I wouldn't say it's defunct. I think, you know, founder like Ken Sato, I think is very much holding to the very initial proposal that's
okay.
there.
Okay.
I think he has every interest and intent in trying to bring that to fruition or reality. I think kind of where I stand at this point is hearing and seeing what the community has done and reacted over the course of the last year and a half. I just want to make sure that that's a very broad and diverse group that we're working with, because I do. I actually think that that's going to add to the programming. It's going to add to the event. It's going to add to the ownership that people feel in this community over that space.
Okay. Now, let me ask all of you, if you think the city is likely to change at all from its concern about whatever goes to Parcel 5 needing to produce tax revenue. And part of this discussion is understanding what does drive development and revenue to begin with. You know, David Riley, former newspaper reporter who's with the Center for Governmental Research, was on this program just a few days ago talking about how, you know, it's easy to say, well, I want a big building. I want a tower or I want a theater, because then you can see the cash register ringing, as opposed to understanding the impact that ripples across the community when it's inclusive, when it's green, when it brings people out all the months of the year. Just a couple of days ago, we had Paul Erickson from the New Rochester Beacon, who wrote a piece this week saying that he doubted that the city would embrace the notion of green space in some form at Parcel 5, but he pointed to other cities and places like Columbus where they have and they've had that measurable impact. But I think it's probably still going to be part of the conversation. I'll start with Ben, go around the table. How much have you sort of, again, kind of going back to what you've learned throughout this process, can you make the argument to the city that you understand that they feel like there's a need to move tax revenue, but this still, whatever happens there, if it's in this form of Visionary Square or sort of a cousin of Visionary Square, it's going to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the city, it's having the green light for us to go forward with anything and understanding that there's not something that's going to be in opposition to that. And I think if the city will trust that we have, you know, best intents in mind and we have an idea and a plan for what the space could be, that we're going to start to see those type of improvements. I think it's really important when you start looking at arguments about, you know, the lack of tax from a large-scale development, you have to have a city that's balanced. You know, we have a $250 million project that's just been identified with the new Performing Arts Center. We don't need a $100 million project at Parcel 5. We have to think in more holistic terms. We have to think about that area as a district. I again will say that the most important thing that we need for the city of Rochester as a whole is to demonstrate that we have activity in the heart of our downtown and that it's activity that everyone can participate in. And, you know, so I think there are plenty of those best case scenarios to and studies to look at. I think Bryant Park is the ultimate model in New York City, which is privately owned, privately funded, but open to everyone in the community. A combination. We have to change the way we think about green space and parks. I don't think we're very creative in how we think about them. I think we have a certain idea of what that means. But, you know, Bryant Park has free Wi-Fi for everyone that comes. There's over 45 power outlets for people to use. You have major corporate sponsors like Southwest Airlines that sponsor things called the Southwest Porch for people to come and relax. There's just no reason why we can't be more creative and work with the industry leaders in this area, you know, to come up with things like, you know, Golisano's Green Light Free Internet in Parcel 5, or a Constellation Brands, you know, wine or beer garden, or Wegmans has some type of food court, you know, clean energy demonstrations. This is a center of the city that can serve as a town square, and it can be programmed with the makers, with the people who are running local businesses and food, with demonstration projects and clean air and other things. I just see unlimited potential here.
Okay. Steve, on the subject of tax revenue, what do you think?
I think indirectly you could see the impact. Like, you won't get the direct from the sale and from the space itself. It might not generate the tax revenue, but indirectly, I mean, it's been shown in cities across America. You see Cleveland, you see Columbus, you see Detroit right now. These are other cities that face winters similar to us, and they have public spaces that are drawing new businesses around them. Detroit especially, they're in the middle of their downtown. They had so much investment, new businesses moving in around it. And that's what we're seeing at Midtown right now. And I think having Parcel 5, a place where people want to be at all times, not just in during the daytime, during lunch, but like after work. And I think all those things will help create a neighborhood there. And I think the nice thing about making it a public space is that it's low risk. Like, if you do it with just as simple as putting sod down, it's low risk. And if it doesn't work, you can modify it. You could add to it. You can take away from it. But you could try it. And let's see what happens, because it's been 3 years of it being a gravel pit and it's worked. And the city hasn't necessarily helped that, but except for like some festivals there. But with it a gravel pit, people are still using it all the time. It's like the College Quad of Rochester, even as a gravel pit.
Mary?
Well, first of all, I think the city has already been on board with the idea of it being at least partially green space. Mm. When it was the Galena proposal, they were all about, you know, live after five, vibrant in our city. And they acknowledged that that green space aspect to it would bring that into the city. And, you know, obviously they wanted to develop the other half of it. But I'm not worried about it generating tax revenue, because it's been proven to do that in other cities by raising the surrounding property values. I'm actually worried about the gentrification that it's going to bring to the city. You know, and I think if we are not careful in enacting protections for tenants and for property values, that this actually could exacerbate the gentrification in our city. I think it's an absolutely critical amenity and necessity that we need in the city, but we have to be really thoughtful about how we develop it. And that's part of why we need it to be such an inclusive and engaged process with the community.
Mary, I want to stay on that thread of gentrification, because number one, I think it's important to point out, Mary's been involved with a lot of organizations and also ran for city council and has considered these issues and continues to work on these issues. So on the subject of gentrification, when you talk about protecting people in, you know, sort of surrounding areas and neighborhoods, mm-hmm. What are the mechanisms that you think could allow for those kinds of protections?
There's a platform that's being pushed by the Citywide Tenant Union, and kind of the three main tenants are, one, no pun intended, one is rent control, which scares everyone, but when done right, can really thoughtfully control the rising rent prices with other protections for landlords, right?
Why do you say it scares everyone?
Because every landlord I've ever talked to have been like, ugh, I don't like that. Because I think they're thinking that they won't be able to make money on their properties, and mm-hmm. that's just not true. You're just not going to make the 200% return that some of these landlords are getting on these properties by not taking care of them. Two is just cause eviction or good cause eviction, which is the simple fact that you can't kick anyone out of your apartment for no good reason. You just have to have a list of reasons, which are, you know, failure to pay rent, violation of a term of the lease, you know, damaging property, things that make sense for you to evict someone. But you can't evict someone so that you can finally do the renovations they've been asking for all these years to turn around and rent to someone who can pay a lot more, which is what we're seeing on a massive scale in the community. And the third one is tenant court. Right now, there are very few reasons why a tenant can bring their landlord to court. And so this would create a housing court in the city of Rochester, which Buffalo already has, so the tenants could bring their landlords to court to get you know, repairs made or to fight back against being unfairly evicted.
Steve and Ben, do you see whether it's Visionary Square or a public space at Parcel 5, do you see that as being a possible gentrifier, and does that concern you? Steve?
Yes, I do see it as possibly being that. If it doesn't include everybody in the process of determining how it's used, I think you could see it turn into something that is only attractive to a certain demographic. And I think we need to make sure that it includes everybody in that process. And then with that, I mean, if something is successful, other things are going to want to be around it. And that's where gentrification can happen, too. So that's something that making sure that like affordable housing is a part of the process for the buildings around it too. And we're seeing that being talked about more and more, trying to define what affordable housing is too, is something as well. But with all these renovations, I think there's $800 million of investment around Midtown that's been done over the past, I don't know how many years, making sure that it's taking into account more than just one single demographic. So,
okay, Ben?
I think, you know, keeping in mind the most important thing is putting the pressure on the function of the space itself, mm-hmm. and that continues to be free and accessible for everyone to engage and be able to participate with. I think that's a huge concern. I think it's interesting looking at Main Street because the challenge right now is that the vacancy rates are extremely high. So we're starting with unoccupied properties, and I think most of those properties are probably commercial and not residential. Now that someone that has those square footage numbers can tell me otherwise. But that's my initial read. I think there's other studies that we could do with affordable housing and related green spaces, I think including MLK Park. You know, I know that that's an area, there's a film that was recently put out where there are residents talking about how they were so happy that they were able to engage with that green space and actually have that as an amenity. So I really put the pressure of gentrification on city leaders developing affordable housing that's in proximity to this space. I think when we're looking at creating a free and accessible space, our greatest goal right now is to create street level activity, and we hope that that has an economic benefit to Rochester. We believe that it may, but I would really put the pressure on those in the housing authorities and otherwise who should be creating affordable, regulated housing for people that can be in proximity to Parcel 5.
Listeners, we'd love to hear from you on this 844-295-TALK as we talk about the future of Parcel 5 and this reset with Mayor Warren and her administration indicating earlier this week that the plans for a Broadway-style theater shifting to the site of the old Radisson, which would be raised and rebuilt as both residential and a Broadway-style theater, 3,000 seats, and a smaller theater, as Mary Lupien points out. So a true performing arts center as opposed to just a single theater. And that opens up Parcel 5 for new questions on what should happen there. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@WXXI.org. Now, the mayor did point to one very specific project in her announcement earlier this week, and that is Kansas City and the Power and Light District there. And I've been there, and a lot of activity. Steve, you've been there too.
Yeah, twice, actually.
A lot of activity and a lot of things happening there, mm-hmm. in a space that, you want to go take a shot at kind of describing it for listeners?
Yeah, I mean, it's a center open area that's covered with a canopy where there's shops and restaurants all around it, two levels. It's concrete. There's a stage, so they have concerts and activity there. I was there in the middle of the day, in the middle of a work week both times, so we were just there for restaurants when we were there. But it is an $800 million-plus dollar project, I'm pretty sure, is how much it costs, and it still requires subsidy.
Again, Ben Walk said 800,000 was the visionary square number.
Yeah. So it was a huge project. I don't know the history of it. I don't know where it, like, what was that space before, but it was kind of in the center of the city.
Yeah.
It was walkable. We walked from, I was there for a convention thing. So.
Did you like it?
Yes. I said, I did. Whether or not I think that is something that fits at Parcel 5 is yet to be determined. I don't think we should rush to build something at Parcel 5. I really think we can start small and test and be incremental about our approach to it and getting community input.
I haven't seen the numbers on the acreage for the Power and Light District space. It's got to be bigger than 1.17 acres, I think.
I would think so. And I think, I mean, if they really wanted, if they ended up going that direction, I mean, you can shut down streets around it too. But yeah, I really think, again, stressing the importance of getting community input and starting incrementally with this instead of rushing to build a very large project there.
Okay, Mary?
Yeah, I just want to add, I don't remember if you said this number, in our survey of 680 people, 70% of those were willing to wait a few years, mm-hmm. to find out what the highest use for Parcel 5 is.
Yeah, I did not say that. I agree. Like, in that survey, too, 96% said they want it available for public use again. So I think that let's do that right away.
Okay, yeah. Ben?
I again would point to more feasible options. Bryant Park, which is 9 acres, had a total redesign of $15 million, which is fairly conservative for New York City. We have 1 acre we're dealing with here. We can adjust down all of those numbers. Again, I think it puts the pressure on being creative and innovative with the space itself. You know, Bryant Park does a winter village of sorts. They have beautiful kiosks that are throughout the park that people can use. You can add heat lamps. You can do outdoor fire pits. I think there's, again, plenty of creativity. I don't think that we necessarily need to go so far as to looking at $800 million projects to facilitate the uses that we're already seeing people use. Again, the lowest denominator here is we're on top of a gravel lot, and mm-hmm. all we can go from here is improved and up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me grab a phone call from Eddie first up on the phone in Rochester. Go ahead, Eddie.
Hi. Are you there?
Yeah, go ahead, Eddie.
Okay. For some reason, I tried to turn my car radio. It wouldn't go off. I think that the downtown area and the politicians in Rochester keep isolating that middle-class family that needs the lower rent in the city. The inner loop was taken out in the area of Park Avenue and that whole area to make it more accessible downtown. St. Paul, Clinton, Hudson, that's still locked with that inner loop right there in their way. So that was all a move to bring all that single professional money downtown. And now they're talking about more housing. Do you know how expensive the housing is in what used to be in Town Mall? Parcel 5's right out of it, right next to there.
Yeah,
they need to do something.
Eddie, I think the city has earnest plans to continue to fill the inner loop. I think all of it eventually is sort of targeted for fill. They started with the Eastern Third, and I do think that from what I understand, they're planning to fill the rest of it. Does that...
Okay. If they are, it started 7 years ago, and they still haven't done anything to that other end.
Okay. I appreciate that, Eddie. Thank you for the phone call. And Eddie is making a valid point on the fact that there's a pretty significant housing stock already for pretty expensive high-end housing.
I think I heard the number of 10,000 new units or 10,000 downtown residents, and that's the bulk of it in the last couple of years.
Yeah. And I know that's like been a goal too. And when you hit 10,000 is when you can start attracting certain other amenities and I've said like a city target and stuff like that. Like you have to hit a certain number before as a developer you could start really attracting some retail downtown. So I think they're getting closer and closer every year to 10,000. So if they're not there already.
Okay. Eddie, thank you for that. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Let's get our only break of the hour, and we're going to come back with Benjamin Welk, Steve Carter, Mary Lupien, talking about their views as members of People for Parcel 5. Ben is a principal at Slow Road Consulting who worked on the Visionary Square proposal. And when we come back, yeah, they're talking about, hey, slow this down. You know, let's continue to take community input into it here. But if the city puts the throttle down on new RFPs and wants to speed that up, I'm curious to know, you know, Ben, do you jump back in? You know, do you want to see Visionary Square sort of added to or back on the table? What is the plan going to be if the city kind of takes a similar approach and puts a clock on it? So we'll talk about that. We'll get more of our listener feedback as we talk about the future of Parcel 5 on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the University of Rochester is hosting an event tonight about Rust Belt urbanism, revitalizing Rust Belt cities, and a way forward for a city like Rochester. What can the city do to revitalize its downtown? How does urbanism come into play with a city like Rochester? Our guests this next hour are going to explore the opportunities for our city and others like it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So Benjamin Welk, if we see the city come out and say, all right, we have moved the RBTL plan, the Performing Arts Center, the theater, it's a fresh slate, but we want new RFPs, we want new ideas for Parcel 5. First of all, what's that mean? And if they put a clock on it, and it's not going to be as patient and sort of slow rolling and incremental as you would like, what does that mean for you and for a plan for open space there? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think the first thing is, I don't know if it requires an RFP to green parcel 5. If they put grass down on the lot, the use is exponentially going to be increased on a day-to-day. It can actually be a comfortable space instead of being on top of gravel. So that's number one. And then I think if there is a new RFP process, or if the city looks to build upon one of the proposals that was initially included as part of that, then I think it's about finding new partners. I think, you know, this entire project and this parcel has grown significantly in public awareness since it was first talked about. And I think whatever was at the table then 2 years ago, I think there's going to be more at the table now. And I just want to echo, you know, in confidence that this is something we really do feel that we can fund at this point with private development, that we don't think we need, you know, a tax break from the city to do this, because of the fact it's incremental, because we're not looking to build a skyscraper. These are much lower budgets, and we need a few willing partners who want to take ownership. The other thing I laugh about is just this idea that while Parcel 5 can be inexpensive to develop and can be accessible to everyone, we still have million-dollar views. And I think people need to keep that in mind. You're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars worth of development around you. And I actually think that's similar to Bryant Park, is one of the things that makes that space work.
And by the way, you know, whether it's Ken Sato, whether it's someone else, do you have people in mind who might be able to step forward and, as you say, sort of take ownership, be involved? Are there people in this community who have even been in touch sort of privately saying, we're ready to do it. If somebody puts a clock on this, we're going to get a proposal out there that this matters.
I think that those people are all there. And I think it's just really making sure that we have a wide enough group that is going to help to, that will be inclusive, that will help this planning process and actually involve some of the people that will make it happen, the actual landscape architects, the private businesses that are interested in relocating there, the technology examples that were shared, you know, whether that's the free Wi-Fi or some sort of solar or clean energy demonstration project. I believe that they're all there. I think, again, the awareness has grown so much in the last 2 years that we have a whole new pool of people that we can bring in. And one other thing I want to say on that is just that we had many people who privately shared interest in this vision after the city had declared that they were going to go with the RBTL proposal on Parcel 5. And due to appearing politically controversial, there were people who were unwilling to step into the spotlight or unwilling to be public at that time. I think if the city gives us a green light to go ahead, I think we're going to see just an incredible outpouring of support.
To make sure I understand here, you had people who, after RBTL's plan was put forward by the city, which is now, I think, what was it, 2017, February,
April,
maybe?
Was it April or February? April. Yeah,
one so of those. It was a year and a half ago plus.
Yeah.
Okay. That people came to you and said, I'm not on board with what the city's doing. I'd like to be able to say it publicly. It's a little dicey. I can't say it publicly. I support you.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, let's see how this shakes out. And so now we've had a development, and I'm curious to see what type of response we have.
Just give me some last names. No first names. Okay.
I can't.
All right, fair enough. But to your point, maybe we will see them step forward publicly if a new process comes forward.
Absolutely. Okay. I think the city just needs to give us a clear path forward.
Okay, Mary?
That's an opportunity for public engagement to come out. Don't stop coming to City Council, because we need to put pressure to let them know how we want the RFP to be written. Mm-hmm. Because how the RFP is written really determines what kind of proposals they're going to get. And we want to make sure that, you know, we've already been doing this community engagement process, and we're going to continue to expand that so that we can come back and say what we want that RFP to look like.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
and,
Steve?
And for people for Parcel 5, on our website, rparcel5.com, We have some like requirements or asks of the city, and one of those right there is to hold a charrette, and that's something that we're going to put pressure on City Council and the city to like do now that this is an open, clean slate again. And so that's something that we think is the best way to help determine the future use of this space. And the other thing is, even though we say we want to be incremental and slow in how this evolves and how what happens there evolves, we think that immediately there should be sod there. Like, it's, we can get that covered. Like, we can help work with the city to get that covered. And that's a low risk. And you get sod there in the spring, and that's all of a sudden, like Ben said, that's exponentially usable.
It's also in city code.
Oh, yes.
Is that right?
Code, yes.
47A-12, mm-hmm. subsection E, it says that any lot, unless it's going to be developed in the next 6 months and is of a certain size, should be sodded. Mm-hmm. And that never happened.
But I wonder, Steve, before I take another couple of phone calls, is there something strategic about that? Do you think in your mind, once the city sees green space there, the public is going to say, "Wow, well, that's exactly what we want. We don't want that to be."
I think it has been strategic to not have grass there at this point, because in other lots all around there, you see in the inner loop, you saw before the DNC was built, that was hydroseeded and that was grass, and parcel 5 for 3 years has just been gravel. So yeah, that probably has been strategic, smart move there, but now this is the chance to do it. Let's do it, and let's make it so that people can use it so that it's not an eyesore in the center of the city.
And my 7-year-olds are very tired of skinning their knees.
Yeah, me too. During wiffle ball.
let me get Wendy and Andrew on the phone. Wendy first. Go ahead, Wendy.
Yes, first of all, I'd like to say congratulations to everybody who has advocated that Parcel 5 not be despoiled with some kind of large development. I think it's great that things are going the right way. Secondly, I want to say that Brian, you keep on bringing up Bryant Park. I had no idea that it had private investment in it. Doesn't surprise me. All of the little restaurants and everything that happens there is just so cool. The last two times I've been in New York City and I've had any time to waste, I have gone to Bryant Park, and time just flew by. I would watch the guys playing ping pong. I even would play ping pong with these guys that were way too good for me. That's the first thing I want after the sod and a little kiosk restaurant is I want that ping pong thing where you get to play ping pong or watch people play ping pong. It's just delightful. Third thing, I have to say, a charrette is exactly the right thing. Having been on the charrette that helped to make University Avenue narrower rather than wider, it has made such a difference that they actually listened to what the community wanted. So I'll leave it at that.
Wendy, thank you for the phone call. And just to clarify, because the term charrette is still sort of foreign to a lot of people, we talked about it with the Shalott charrette last year. A charrette is usually a one-day sort of community gathering or an event that's open to anyone in the community who wants to show up and essentially work group ideas, come up with ideas for the best use of a space, best access for a space, how to do that, creative solutions. And so a Parcel 5 charrette, we'll see if it's in the offing.
We hope so.
Yeah, that's something that they'd like to see. Anything you guys want to add on what Wendy said there? You going to do ping pong down there?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I think that element of play, you know, we're seeing the Strong Museum of Play in neighborhoods come up. I think I have a 3-year-old at home, and I think, you know, something that involves things for families to do and is, again, one more way to build for the future for the city of Rochester as well.
And we've seen Parcel 5 over these past few years be a place for families to come downtown. I met a family that just, they would take the bus and come downtown and go to Parcel 5 and blow bubbles and draw with chalk there because it was like this great open space in the center, and they could let the kids run around there even though it was gravel. It was just this nice calm area in the middle of a busy city, which is great.
And that's one thing that we haven't talked about yet is the aspect of connection. Mm-hmm. You know, Parcel 5 is within walking distance of the Strong Museum, and it's going to be in walking distance of the Rock the Riverway project. And hopefully when we get Gibbs Street blocked off to cars and make it a pedestrian-only walking district, these are going to connect to each other and create a connectivity and a walkable downtown like we keep saying that we want. It's all about putting the pieces together.
Yeah, it's right near the bus garage. It's right near bike share all around it, too. So, yeah, it's a perfect location.
All right, so let me get Andrew on the phone in Irondequoit next. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, great show. I can't understand exactly what you guys are talking about. You said if the city gives us the go-ahead to do what? I still don't understand exactly what you guys are talking about. Just a big green lawn?
Well, to answer your question, I think that's step one. You know, in taking in the context of what has occurred over the last year and a half, you have to understand that from those of us that have advocated for public space, everything we've been trying to do is convince the city that the RTL is not the best selection for Parcel 5. So,
but what is public? What do you mean by public space? You mean just
Publicly accessible space where people can gather. I mean, similar to what's happened for events, for concerts, you know, to have chairs and tables over a lawn for people to come and do things like movies with the downtown view and watch free movies. adding some elements of local makers or mm-hmm. restaurants or prepared foods, augmenting a public space to...
I mean, but a big green space is not a restaurant. It's too... What do you mean, on the edges of it or something?
Yeah, there can be kiosks and other things. If people are interested in seeing, you know, the original Visionary Square proposal that had an attempt to look at some of those things, that's visionarysquare.org.
Did you have food trucks, if I remember?
Yeah, the zoned food truck areas, very small kiosks. The idea was shipping containers. Shipping containers can actually be quite highly designed if you do them right.
Okay.
But other, you know, glass kiosks, places, you know, for during the winter months that people could actually go in and get warm, or similar to Bryant Park, for those that are familiar, that have those little tiny store retail shops that you can actually step inside and see what's mm-hmm. being sold, all within the context of a green space.
Maybe you could get a Shake Shack to move up there.
It's a great idea. Great idea.
Seriously.
Swillburger pop-up.
Swillburger pop-up.
Local business.
Andrew, thanks for the phone call. Anything else you want to add with these guys?
Well, I mean, I like that you guys are trying to do something, but, you know, is the city hurting for money?
I don't know many cities that would say they are not hurting for money.
Because they might want to get some tax money out of their space. Is what I'm saying, and they own the property. Or that's another thing. You should have a show, Evan, on who owns Rochester. Is it the city or is it the citizens? I don't.
What?
Does that make any sense to you, that question?
Absolutely.
So first of all, Andrew, thank you for the phone call. Second of all, that question does make sense. I think you're asking in a functional way, but there's also sort of a theoretical, philosophical question mm-hmm. on who owns the city. The city or the citizens. And so let's start with Parcel 5. Who owns Parcel 5?
In technicality, the city of Rochester,
city of Rochester.
Owns Parcel 5.
City
but
of Rochester.
Our parcel.
So, Andrew, whether you intended to or not, it's almost like you teed up our guests to talk about exactly what this means. Steve's got a big smile on his face because the question of who owns it or should own it is part of the mission, I think.
I think the role of government is to represent the people that are citizens. And so I think what we're trying to do is work with our local government here through People for Parcel 5 to help represent the people to the government to help make those decisions. And so I think it is important to know that Rochester, like, is ours. Like, we have to take ownership in order to make anything happen. Instead of just sitting around and letting decisions be made for us, we need to be a part of it and be engaged in it.
The website for your organization is?
Ourparcel5.com, O-U-R.
Our Parcel 5. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. Andrea, that's their feeling on who owns it and what should be done with it. I'll also say, Andrea, I know you have questions about tax revenue. Just real quick, you might have missed an earlier part of the discussion in which our guests think that it's a bit of a red herring to say, well, if you make it mostly green or publicly accessible and you don't put a big tower or residential or retail development, that you're going to lose tax revenue because of the impact of successful gathering space. So again, if Andrew wants to check it out, where would you send people like Andrew to look at other communities that have had...
Oh, we do have it on our website, our Parcel 5. We have... where this works, we have case studies, we have work that so many people in our group has done researching economic impact, and yeah, it's all there. Ben has more.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that we haven't really talked about the potential for districts like this and public green spaces to gather corporate headquarters, mm-hmm. and that's actually in our case studies. That's something that mm-hmm. we found. Campus Meridius in Detroit, Michigan, was the key reason. I believe CompuWare
yeah.
chose to move their corporate Quicken, headquarters yeah. because they focus so much on employee wellness that having a green space, that green spaces are proven to benefit physical activity, but a lot of people don't understand that. There are studies that show that physical activity is the secondary benefit to green spaces, and that actually mental health is mm-hmm. the first. And so these type of companies and corporations want somewhere where their employees can have a high quality of life. And I believe Parcel 5 is part of a much larger district-wide solution to Midtown and Main Street as a whole.
So for Andrew and anyone else listening on Parcel 5 today who has a real interest in what happens downtown, which is, I don't know, everyone probably listening right now, this is one organization, one group of the community that's got very strong views on it. You will hear others on this program as time goes forward. It is worth considering, though, how much taxpayer outlay is going to be required on the front end, whether it's state tax dollars, federal tax dollars, or local tax dollars. A lot of big projects like this end up needing more taxpayer support. I don't mean like this as in a green space. I mean you know, residential towers, sports stadiums, performing arts centers. It's not to say that it's impossible that it never would, but there's a tax outlay that you probably ought to consider as well, or the question of whether there's a tax agreement. Are certain tenants or companies going to have to pay taxes? So on the tax question, it's a fair question, Andrew. There's a lot that goes into it, and a lot that we'll have to try to figure out, no matter what goes there. John, though, is calling to say he thinks the city already has this secretly figured out. Is that right, John?
Yes, I do. Since the city article indicated that this has actually been in the works since June or something in their article, their reporting, I would guess that along with that, something is already in the works for Parcel 5.
Okay. So, as in, you don't know what that is, but you think the city is sort of playing cat and mouse, but they're being a little coy, but but they know what they're going to put there. And you think it's not going to be green space?
Well, I don't know what it's going to be, but I think they've got a plan. And I would guess that people need to be ready for that.
Okay. John, thank you. Mary, do you?
I would agree with you. I think a responsible administration has a backup plan for everything. And I think that this has been in the works for possibly even longer than 2 months. And I think we are ready. Mm-hmm. We're ready with what we want. And we've been coming to every city council meeting for the past 2 years.
I want to indicate, too, though, because I think this has been left out, that, you know, the city for the first time, not only in moving RBTL off Parcel 5, also indicated that they would be open to something that's supportive of the type of events that have happened at Parcel 5. Even looking at something as large as the KC Power and Lights District, well, guess what? That's a public gathering space where they do outdoor concerts. That's actually, I would say, an endorsement of the concepts that we've been talking about for 2 years, that is the key to downtown. So I'm actually encouraged and thankful to the administration for reconsidering Parcel 5 as a something not to be for the RBTL, but actually now to be steered and pointed towards something that everyone can enjoy.
And here's a name we haven't brought up this hour, and it's Andy Galina. So for a while, Andy Galina is a developer whose project was assumed to be the front runner, which was a residential tower with retail at, I'm trying to remember, it's been a little while, first floor, second floor?
First and second, I think. Yep. And then there's office space, too.
Some office space, and a little bit more green space than we would have seen in the Morgan proposal. So it was kind of an amalgam. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people thought that project was on track. And all of a sudden, a year and a half ago, the mayor calls a news conference, and boom, it's RBTL. And Mr. Galina has said on numerous occasions that he was surprised by that. I think he told City News that. But he has other things going on. I mean, Galina has a lot going on in other places. Does that mean that they would sort of re-up their proposal? I have no idea. I don't have confirmation. We've reached out. So that's not clear. Just real briefly, I'm not doing my due diligence if I don't ask all of you what you thought about that proposal and if that was back on the fast track, Mary?
Well, you know, I remember back then we were organizing against that proposal because it didn't have enough green space. And the location of the tower was really problematic and cutting it off from really being an open and accessible space. I actually remember the day that they announced RBTL project because I was on this show talking about the city council race. And I was very upset. but, you know, I think that this really is a special location. And we cannot underestimate the potential that an open and engaged public space, flexible, mixed use can bring to our city. And to put a building on it would be a waste.
Steve.
So I sort of differ with Mary on this, actually. Personally, this doesn't represent the views of people for Parcel 5. But the Galinas, I would say they've done a really great job at investing in the Midtown area. And I thought that proposal, while like I still wasn't in favor of rushing to building something there, it was a compromise, and it did allow for us to still actively gather there and still have a town center, city center that can be used by the public. And they seemed very willing to work with our group to make that programmed well. But at the same time, it added frontage to Main Street, which I know that many people, city council members, wanted to create a corridor on Main Street of buildings. Yeah. And so that helps for walkability in that way. And they did have with the tower, which it wasn't really clear in a lot of the imagery for it in a lot of the renderings, but there was a corridor through the, or not corridor, but like a walkway through the middle of the tower where like shops and stuff faced inward in that covered corridor underneath the tower that led from Main Street to the public space in the back. And so if there had to be a building there at Parcel 5 out of the other ones, that was the one that I was in favor of.
Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at what the Galenas have done for that whole section, it's important to keep in mind that they've also purchased a building since that initial parcel five conversation happened with the Windstream building next door and are planning to add towers to that. So I think at the end of the day, what's important is that the space will work for the purposes that we set forward for the day-to-day use, but also continue to gather those larger events and concerts. But a lot of people don't know, too, that Andy Galena was involved in the decision to help bring the Jazz Festival downtown to begin mm-hmm. with. So we've had nothing but open dialogue with him, you know, throughout this process. I'm confident that, you know, they would be reflective of what the community wants and needs, and they're also, I think, doing downtown a favor by gathering, you know, companies like Datto in the Metropolitan and actually helping to bump up a place where people can work or live downtown.
All right, I always appreciate the conversation with Andy Galena. So if your ears are burning, Andy, I'm going to keep calling you. But who knows? Again, I mean, a lot's changed in a year and a half. And so we're starting the process freshly, taking a look at what happens at Parcel 5. Steve, where would you send people to learn more about what you guys
want? Go to ourparcel5.com, O-U-R, mm-hmm. parcel5.com.
Our Parcel 5, the number 5 or the word?
Oh, yeah, the number 5.
All right,
yeah.
ourparcel5.com if you want to learn more about that. And it's a diverse, not only diverse in terms of background, socioeconomics, race and ethnicity, diverse views. Some are going to say no to any building. Some are going to say if it's a compromise, it's a compromise. But that's where part of the conversation is. We'll have you back. Thanks, Steve. Thanks for being here. Thanks, Mary Lupien. Nice to see you. Thank you. And Ben Welk from Slow Road Consulting. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, short break. More connections coming up.